seems like forever as I say it's 5 minutes. We got to figure this one out, right? Okay, let's see. Let me head on cassette. Maybe that'll do it. Let me put the pause. There we go. Oh, I figured it out. Okay, now we're off and running. Are you ready? This is Mae Brussel. It is program number 572. It is November 22nd, 1982, the 19th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy. I forgot to put on the disclaimer, too, and I'll say that now. Anything that I say on this station, on the cassettes, or on the air, I'm totally responsible for. The station has no responsibility for the material that I have going out now. I'm not going to speak specifically about John Kennedy tonight because there's other news that's much more important in my mind that goes back to the Kennedy assassination for sure. But I prefer to use this news at this time and share with you some of the other information that I'm working on. And we'll get back to the specifics of who killed John Kennedy on another program. I'll do 1 hour on that when I really feel up to it. But tonight I want to get to these other matters. One thing I did want to say is that for 11 years I was on another station that was privately owned and then came to this station in July. And I didn't understand the financial trouble that this station was having. It wasn't clear to us, and there was a notice in our boxes last week that the station may close, that they put up a large antenna. It's probably the largest in the area, reaches more people, but the expenses with Pacific Gas, Electric, the operating expenses have been tremendous to keep the high towers going to reach as many people. So I took on an obligation to try and raise about $1,500 for the station. I got $100 today from somebody. The tape cassettes went out when I wasn't on the air. They go out as usual to subscribers and to other stations. But people who get this program and hear it every week and who enjoy it, I would like to ask you in some way, if any of you can, to think in terms of contributing towards the station. They need it badly, and I've committed myself to raise $1,500 towards that goal. I've got $100 today, and I'm going to work for that because they need equipment in the office, and they need a lot of things to keep this station going, and it's very important. So whatever you feel like doing, and for the holidays or whatever, give one less gift and send it to KAZUFM because there's a wide range of programs, and we really appreciate anything you want to give to the station. Now, 1 year ago, this evening, on the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination, was November 22nd, 1981, broadcast number 520. I was talking about Otto von Bolschwing and the article that Pete Carey did in the San Jose Mercury, November the 18th of last year, and the importance of Otto von Bolschwing. And even though he passed away this year, his relationship to ITT, to Ford Motor Company, to the American Espionage Systems, to Stanford Technology, to Helene von Damm, who makes the appointments in the White House, his relationship to Palestine, it became Israel and the Haganah, and probably one of the most important men of American history. And I was very excited on the anniversary of Kennedy's death that this man surfaced, even in a small way, because the Reinhard Gehlen agents in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in New Orleans worked with Lee and Marina Oswald, and he was the heir to Adolf Hitler's Gehlen operation in the United States, so had to be the superior and have tentacles overseas and in the United States to these various people. That was 1 year ago this week, tonight, and yesterday in the San Francisco Chronicle, there is a very large article on Otto von Bolschwing by his son, and I'm going to share that with you. It's 1 year later, and there's some very revealing things that he's saying. Just a few items before I get into some important material, which I call the circle, putting together, if you can imagine, and get your pencil while I'm on the air, or you can write to me for a bibliography of the program at Box 22511, Carmel 93922. I have various subjects, favorite subjects that I have deemed to be most important, and of course they would someday link together. One of them is that cast of characters, particularly at 20th Century Fox, because it involves Gerald Ford, and he was a member of the Warren Commission, one of the most important members for the CIA, hiding the Nazi organized crime connections. The other subject, my favorite subject, is, of course, Otto von Bolschwing and his links to everywhere from Richard Nixon to it's a whole list of subjects that I've sent out on the Bolschwing tapes and sheets on this particular character. And another area that has fascinated me the past few years is Michael Sindona and the Vatican connection, the Vatican banks, and the links of the Vatican investments to American politics, to organized crime, and to the international fascist network started before World War II and continuous today. And then to top it off this week, I'm going to try in a way that isn't too complicated to put John DeLorean into this network. Now, John DeLorean's attorney is Joseph Ball, who was the attorney for the Warren Commission. And John DeLorean is on the board of Chriscraft, which owns 20% of 20th Century Fox. It's a tangled web, and you won't remember all of the names, but you'll get a pretty good idea of this circle. So sometime during this program, get your pencil, and if you want to take some notes, it would be great. Now, a few items I want to get over before I get to those subjects and the interconnections of them. I did mention on the air last week or the week before the trial in San Antonio, Texas, of Joseph Chagra and Jimmy Chagra. And the Mr. Harrelson, H-A-R-R-E-L-S-O-N, who's being charged with the murder of the judge, Judge John Wood. The quotation that I had about the John Kennedy assassination came in the Dallas Times-Herald, an article by Stuart Lytle, Dallas Times-Herald, November the 2nd, 1982. And in that newspaper item, it says, in the testimony this morning, that was in first week of November this month, in the testimony this morning, Joe Chagra, the attorney, said that Mr. Harrelson, he's the defendant in the case of shooting Judge John Wood, bragged to him that he had killed President John Kennedy in 1963. He said that Harrelson drew a map of the area where Kennedy was shot in downtown Dallas and told Chagra where he hid to shoot Kennedy. In his testimony, Chagra did not specify where Harrelson claimed he was hiding. Now, they didn't ask him in the attack of shooting U.S. District Judge John Wood Jr. where Harrelson was hiding. Well, why didn't the major newspapers pick this up? This was a story carried on some wire services, Dallas Times-Herald, because I had mentioned a long time ago in relationship to Edwin Wilson, a defendant in Maryland this last week who has three more trials going, that Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple worked with the China Lake emptying of American weapons to send overseas to Gaddafi. They worked with Harrelson and Chagra. That was their Las Vegas connection to Nguyen Bank. And Theodore Shackley, who was in charge of covert operations for the CIA, and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple would then be located as a role in the Kennedy assassination, which I know they all had a part of, particularly knowing their operations before and after. Theodore Shackley brought over to the Bay of Pigs to the anti-Castro Cubans and Wilson, the paymaster for the anti-Castro Cubans that killed John Kennedy and worked with Frank Sturgis, Frank Fiorino, and so forth. So they have to bypass this because to bring out a question about what do you mean, Harrelson, what are you saying, in the courts of Dallas would open up the can of worms that is trying to cover its bases at the present time every which way. But these assassins are in the news one way or the other, and Harrelson would be and could be telling the truth because the other people linked to the Chagra boys and the Las Vegas connections, and I say the Australian Nguyen Bank. Now, I mentioned a cosmetic war going on. It was just beginning when Mary Martin had her near-fatal crash when her friend and associate was killed in that car crash. But now there is a real cosmetic war, if that wasn't enough, in the Defense Department. And the reason I bring this up is Helene von Dahm, the woman who worked under Otto von Bolschwing, has made an appointment of Ronald Lauder, L-A-U-D-E-R, of Estee Lauder Incorporated, chairman of Estee Lauder International. And she said for the White House, this is in the Washington Post, we want him on the board of the Defense Department. Helene von Dahm, the White House personnel director, said, He has been in and out of the Defense Department talking to various officials about defense matters. Lauder is the son of Estee Lauder, the cosmetic magnate. And Helene Von Dahm makes appointments for the Defense Department. That's how important she is, and that's why I keep bringing her up, is that she not only makes appointments for the marshals and the various high cabinet positions of Ronald Reagan and for his administration when he was governor for 8 years, but she chooses people for the Defense Department, and her name is in the Washington Post in conjunction with that particular job. This is November the 10th, 1982. Now, more sinister than that is another article in the Washington Post, November the 9th, 1982, about the very secretive J. Peter Grace. Now, many of you remember going back to broadcast 531, I quoted the San Francisco Chronicle, Reagan's choice linked to war criminal, how Ronald Reagan, again through Helene Von Dahm, had appointed J. Peter Grace to a special committee, a private sector committee, and that he is directly linked to Otto Ambrose, the war criminal who designed Auschwitz, who designed the chemical Zyklon B, who worked for IG Farben and our Energy Department, who was tried at the war trials in Nuremberg, and the prosecutors pointed to his work with Farben, his use of slave laborers, Auschwitz concentration camp, locating Auschwitz for the Nazis. Now, J. Peter Grace was appointed by, again, Von Dahm for Ronald Reagan on a special committee, and now Representative Ford of Michigan, Representative William D. Ford of Michigan, is furious and has subpoenaed the Attorney General, William French Smith, because the committee that he set up in Washington, according to the Washington Post, this is November the 9th, 1982, is a secretive group with 1,000 people set up by W.R. Grace, by J. Peter Grace, chairman of W.R. Grace, and they refuse to give the General Accounting Office a list of the 1,000 members of its 35 task forces. They have 35 task forces made up of 1,000 people, and the Washington Post says that they are subverting the Constitution and the Congress, and they're going to have subpoena the Attorney General to get the documents, that they are working against the government in not telling who is on the committee. Their studies for the president are privately funded, private citizens that you don't know who. I mean, there could be 99% Gestapo that live here now at the present time. And they are doing reports for Ronald Reagan, for the president, and they have subpoenaed William French Smith to get the documents on the president's private sector survey on cost control. And they've asked them, give us the names of the people that are subverting the Congress and the Constitution, and coming out with advice for the President of the United States that they will not do. It's not that anything they're doing is allegedly top government secret. They won't let you know who is advising the president. And these Nazis like Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and Reinhard Gehlen subverted the Constitution totally, and now they're at the most dangerous hanky-panky in advice to the president. And in order to save cost control, one more warning about this particular Mr. Grace of W.R. Grace and Company, Mr. J. Peter Grace. He's supposed to figure out how to save money. And I want you to listen to this article loud and clear, because I can guarantee you, you will hear it again from me. And I hope you write to members of Congress. This is from the Houston Post, October the 14th, 1982, bagged coal pipeline project draws praise. A $2 billion to put Colorado coal into plastic bags and dump it hundreds of miles away into water. Mr. Grace has given a contract to take these plastic bags of coal and draw a pipeline 1,200 miles into the ocean, sponsored by W.R. Grace. Now, I think of the body bags at Jonestown and run by these same people, and the bodies were allowed to rot, and they put them in those black bags that didn't do autopsies and mass graves for the children. You better watch the conveyor belt from Colorado to the ocean, because with this secrecy, with this mentality, the idea is to put coal and desalted water and a project that Mr. Grace himself is meeting with 1,000 secret men on 350 committees that they will not tell us who they are. And William French Smith is tied to this Odessa network, and I hope I have time to give you all the links of him to this. But if not this week, next week. That bag cold pipeline is one of the most dangerous operations. Look for it and watch and write if you want to. It was in the Houston Post, October 14th, 1982. If you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you copies of these articles on the committee of Mr. J. Peter Grace. He is the domestic head of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta that has dual citizenship in Italy and in the United States, and they are turning this country over to the Nazis. It's been a continuous pattern. I don't want to sound too paranoid every week, but these articles are frightening, and the secrecy of these people is exactly what I expected out of that committee when it was appointed. And getting back to von Bolschwing, Otto von Bolschwing, and Helene von Damm, she passes on these appointments, and that's where the danger is. Now, one quick story. All of you read about the draft case that was thrown out in Los Angeles. The federal judge, an article in the LA Times, scolded the government for turning totally useless papers over when he gave a request for papers. U.S. District Judge Terry J. Hatter, Jr., he referred to the government officials as pulling a Watergate, hiding the tapes he was supposed to get. He says their behavior is not acceptable. He said the court can't tolerate the kind of material they're offering us. And he asked for Mr. Meese, and he wouldn't come, and Mr. Jenner. And they had to throw the case out, the draft case, because the government officials were up to a collusion and hanky-panky. The judge was scolding them. Well, this week, the judge survived, but he was in a car wreck, a very small article in the San Francisco Chronicle. Judge in draft case hurt in car wreck. In Los Angeles, the federal judge who freed a draft resister, a deadly blow to the selective system, was injured. Judge Hatter's head broke the windshield of the car. He banged his elbow, his legs. He was in emergency hospital. He's all right. He almost got a Kevin McCullough. If it wasn't a heart attack, it could be a car crash. He survived it, but just within a week after the decision where he was giving it to them loud and clear, he has this strange crash. Now, there's one other item, and then I'll get on to what I consider really some of the most important information that I've been able to put together in a long, long time, and I've worked very hard on it for the last 3 weeks. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story this week, November 17th, Andropov, the best informed man in the world. And I told you, with the head of the KGB now running the Soviet Union, and if all their information is the kind of information I have, we're in a totally different kind of ball game, and it'll be very interesting to see how we keep up with what they know and how we modify our behavior if he is the best informed man of the world. Now, he meets, as I say, eyeball to eyeball with Ronald Reagan. There was an article in the Los Angeles Herald just last week, Atomic Tiff Over Reagan Freeze Remarks. And this is about the ACLU and various organizations accusing the president of using McCarthyism because he said that foreign agents had a role in the nuclear freeze movement. And various people and investigators asked him for his evidence. Where did you come up with the evidence that this happened? If you said it, prove it to us. And he pulled out the Reader's Digest. And the way to describe our president versus the head of the Soviet Union is a cartoon that Conrad had in the LA Times. It's Ronald Reagan in bed, and he's reading the Reader's Digest, and his hair is standing on end. And underneath it says, Foreign Policy Briefing. Now, I don't know what Reader's Digest costs because I haven't bought it in years, but let's say a dollar and a quarter or whatever. We pay our spy agencies $22 billion. The National Security Agency, the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the FBI, the National Security Council, a budget of about $22 billion a year. And when they ask the President of the United States where he gets his information, he gets it from the Reader's Digest. So just do away with the intelligence apparatus if that's what he needs, given the Reader's Digest. Now I'm going on to that web, and it is a web The Odessa, the term that the Nazis used at the end of World War II to set up their network, or Despeter, the spider. A spider's web has various posts, and the spider weaves around and weaves around, so you can't hit one piece of that web that's hanging up there if you see it in the light and say, this is what the spider lives in or catches his flies or whatever he does there. A web is put together with various pieces secured at various posts, and then the spider spins around it, so that when you're talking about the spider or the Odessa, you can't simplify. You sometimes can talk about a particular and then sometimes in general. Now, this past week, I'm going on to the Odessa and these other matters and try to give you a framework of where some of the news events fit in. And I might say, and I hope I have time to do it tonight, have you noticed that the Tylenol story went off the news when John DeLorean was arrested? Have you seen anything about the Tylenol killer or the quest? Well, I have made about 12 or 14 interesting links or possible connections to the DeLorean saga, to the IG Farben Tylenol story, and I'll do those for you. But watch how quiet Mr. Tylenol scandal fades away. We'll all buy the product again, and we'll forget who caused it or where the agents are. And they've been suggested, Mr. Lewis with the alias Richardson, and Mr. Arnold, and a wealthy stockbroker in Chicago, and very interesting bank connections, city locations, and travel connections to the DeLorean story. But the Tylenol faded when DeLorean phased in. Now, Charles Higham was up here on the peninsula this week. He brought a manuscript of his new book. If you have a Christmas, Hanukkah present, or birthday to give to somebody, save your money. His book will be out in December or January, his new book. It's called Trading with the Enemy, an expose of Nazi American money plot from 1933 to 1949. It's by Delacorte Press. It's going to be $16. Put it on your list, Trading with the Enemy. Why is this book so important? Because I told them I didn't have a chance to read it. I just saw, you know, it in the hand. It's a manuscript that details corporations such as Standard Oil of New Jersey, the Chase Manhattan Bank, the Texas Company, ITT, Ford Motor Company, and Sterling Products working with the Nazis from 1933 to 1949, 2 years after the National Security Council and the CIA were formed. From the day Hitler came to power up through the and into the Cold War, where the von Bolsheviks take over, and on through Watergate with the ITT connections and the DeLorean with General Motors. There is a story here that is a very basic story to all of the researchers that want to know the continuous process of funding Adolf Hitler going back from the time of World War I, and how the same people, the same corporations, and Reader's Digest, again, that the president was quoting, very much a part of that story. Trading with the Enemy will be out. I can't tell you more, but you will enjoy that as part of your library to put the pieces together. Now, going from Trading to the Enemy to the book that will be out, there is a new article yesterday in the paper, The Dark Past He Couldn't Escape. And this is an article by the son of Otto von Bolsheviks, who has law offices up in the Bay Area and also in Ireland. And he's talking about his father, who was a genuine war hero. And he is telling about his work with the United States Army continuously and his membership in the Nazi Party, in the SS, his role with displaced persons. And he had shady dealings in the 1933 in espionage business in Palestine, in America, and so forth. Then he tells about his father started with American intelligence before the war. He said, von Bolsheviks visited William Donovan, the head of the American OSS, in New York City in 1939. Now, William Donovan, as soon as the Soviet Revolution took place, went up to visit the White Russians. He was sent up to the Far East into Siberia to meet Admiral Alexander Kolchak, K-O-L-C-H-A-K. You might have the book, Kolchak's Gold, and the story of Kolchak. He went up to Vladivostok and worked with the white Russian community. Then he went with Herbert Hoover, who was over in Europe. The Rockefeller Foundation created the American War Relief Commission that Herbert Hoover was the head of when he was arming the white Russian czarists. And Herbert Hoover made Mr. Donovan the Attorney General of the United States before the OSS. Herbert Hoover was Secretary of Commerce at the time when he appointed J. Edgar Hoover as FBI director. And Mr. Donovan of the OSS, who was working with von Bolschwing. Now, in 1939, von Bolschwing was a financier for the Krupps. And then he's in the, from 33, the whole time he was working for Adolf Hitler and in Palestine and in the Netherlands and in Romania, working with those organizations, the worst fascist elements. He was in the United States with Donovan. So that places him. The OSS was formed in 1942. It places him in 1939 with William Donovan, and Donovan is up with the white Russian czars. Donovan worked with Herbert Hoover going back to this time period where Herbert Hoover was setting the stage for World War II and then World War III on the pain of World War I. Now, this story about von Bolschwing in the article this week has some very interesting facts that I'll go into later. And he says in 1969, von Bolschwing became a business consultant for a Sacramento technological firm, TCI. That was the company that his father worked for. And this article came out in the paper yesterday. And for the past 2-3 weeks, I've been photocopying the corporate papers from the Security Exchange Commission on TCI. And that corporation was formed by a group of people that New York, Beverly Hills, Washington, and San Francisco that I'm going to get into that directly links to John DeLorean, 20th Century Fox, the Vatican banks, and von Bolschwing, and using Democratic offices to set up the spy work for the Nazis. Now, this story, there are many details or quotations in this article I'll get to later on that subject. But I'm going now to the John DeLorean story, which I hope in this half hour will make a cycle to von Bolschwing and TCI. It makes it in my mind, and I want to share it with you. We'll take a break in about 1 minute because I was about 2 minutes late here in getting the tape started, and then we'll continue on this story. There was an article in the New York Times on about the DeLorean family. It glamorized them. DeLorean, A Life of Extravagance, November the 9th, 1982, page A20, if you want to look it up. And it tells about DeLorean. I'm going to his New York connections right now, not the California. He was in California, and that's another part of his life. But in New York, he is close to Herbert J. Siegel, chairman of Chris Craft Industries, David Mahoney, chairman of Norton Simon, Roger Penske, a millionaire race car driver, Pete Rozelle, the National Football League, Robert Fairchild, a wine importer, the vice president, Sheldon Tannen of 21 Club, Don Hewitt of CBS 60 Minutes. Mr. Siegel put Mr. DeLorean on the board of Chris Craft, and he's listed there as a board director, as a part of the Chris Craft Corporation. John DeLorean is part of the Chris Craft Corporation. I'll take a one-minute break now, and then we'll get back to John DeLorean, Chris Craft, and Mr. Siegel.